You're listening to the Fusion Patrol Podcast.
Good evening and welcome to another episode of Fusion Patrol. I'm Eugene.
I'm Ben.
And tonight we are going to be looking at something quite different from what we normally do. Just as a word of warning to you all, typically speaking, we've noticed that episodes of Fusion Patrol run somewhere between 50 and 110% the length of the program we're reviewing. So get yourself some snacks and get prepared, because tonight we're reviewing 25 hours of Gosei Sentai Die Ranger. So we don't know where this is going to take us, but...
or how long it'll take us.
But we'll try not to make it last 12 to 28 hours, because I don't think I have the disk space for that. It's not because of kindness to you or anything like that. It's just that it would inconvenience me. So let me explain why and what and wherefore. As you may recall, we had an episode not too terribly long ago, sometime in this decade, and in it we described our top science fiction shows. And one of the shows that Ben brought to the list was Gosei Sentai Die Ranger, which means 5 stars Japanese, in case you didn't catch that. It means 5-star
Task Force.
Task Force, and Die Ranger is, well, Die Ranger. And it wasn't on my list, but I will admit that I'm a big fan of the show. But I thought we could give it a talk this week, and...
well, there's a reason why.
Is there?
Well, yeah.
What is that reason?
You've been giving me the episodes.
Oh, that's the reason. Oh, okay. That's just coincidental.
Oh, hardly.
Well, it is. Our good... okay, so... Die Ranger is a classic Japanese kids program. There's no other way for me to describe it. It's a kids program. And it's in Japanese. And the good folk... the good chaps at TV Nihon, which is a fan-subbing site, have recently picked up the banner of Die Ranger and fan-subbed it. And so finally, for the first time in 15 or 20 or years, however long it's been since that show came out, we had the opportunity to watch it and actually know for sure what they were saying.
Well, we think we know for sure.
Well, I think it's close enough that we can...
I think it's close enough that we have a pretty accurate idea of what the overall story is.
So let's talk Super Sentai for a second. Or Sentai, as I'll probably use them interchangeably. Starting sometime back in about 1975, Toei Television, Bandai, the toy makers, and... TV Asahi, I believe, got together and produced a superhero show called Go Ranger, Himetsu Sentai Go Ranger. And this was, some people argue, the start.
This is the first one I ever saw.
And other people would say that Battle Fever J in 1979 was the start of the Super Sentai series. And these are, well... they're what, and you know, once I say this, then the whole thing just goes downhill from there, because then everyone goes, oh, God. It's what Mighty Morphin Power Rangers was based upon. These are...
let's rephrase that so that people get a better understanding.
What you're
trying. Mighty Morphin Power Rangers took what was the gem of the Super Sentai series, and completely ruined it for American television.
Yes. All right, I'll go along with that, and I want to compare and contrast that a little bit when we get to it. But nonetheless, in these shows, basically every year since 1979, assuming we don't count Go Ranger and Jaka, which is the other one that came before. See, there's a distinction between Sentai and Super Sentai, which this is so nerding out right now that I'll probably just cut it out of the
podcast. Don't you dare, because I want to hear this part.
But the distinction between a Sentai and a Super Sentai series was originally that a Super Sentai series has a giant robot.
Aha!
And a Sentai series did not have a giant robot.
Yeah, because Gullranger, to the best of my knowledge, never had a robot.
No, neither they nor Jakka, which is J-A-K-Q, Jack Ace King Queen, is where that comes from. And but after that, Battle Fever J, Denjiman, Dynaman, Sun Vulcan, Bioman, Turbo Ranger,
Liveman,
Changeman, Massman, Fastman, I mean, Jetman, all of these were Super Sentai shows, and they run a year. This is, you know, these wimpy guys that crank out 13 episodes of a TV show in a year, these are 50, 51, 49 episodes every year since 1979. I have to give them that. And the way they do that is by not writing a new script every week. They just have the same formula over and over again.
It's recycle.
Oh, yeah.
They just change the characters and the setting a bit.
Yeah.
But it's a winning formula.
Winning formula, yes. So you've got five people, they're finding costumes, they've been given superpowers, aliens, fight aliens, alien gets big, bring in the big robot, fight big robot, done. It may sound like nonsense, and it is, because it's a kids program, and it's not a kids program for big program kids either. Anyway, we've chosen Die Ranger because, in my opinion, and I'm going to probably say that I've seen more
Super You've seen Sentai. More than I have.
I've seen more Super Sentai than Ben has. I think it's the cream of the crop.
I've seen a healthy amount of the series that came before Zyuranger, and the series saw a little bit of the series that came after Kakuranger, and bits of Karranger, Oranger, and the later ones I think just really began to tank. But Die Ranger just really, even in its corniness, I thought it really stood out higher than the rest.
So, the premise, we are not going to go through 50 episodes of Die Ranger bit by bit. We'll spare you that. But the basic premise of the show is that thousands of years ago...
6,000, I believe.
That's thousands.
Yeah, but I'm just being a bit more specific.
Somewhere.
China.
There were three tribes of people. The Dai, the Goma, and the Muggles.
because that third tribe, whose name I don't remember, they are the
humans.
They're basically humans. They're the ancestors to us.
The Dai and the Goma went to war, and it was an epic war. And it waged on, and it was nearly defeated in betrayal and all those fun things that you have in wars, and then, I don't know, kind of petered out or something anyway.
Goma just went away.
Yeah, thousands of years later, the Goma are back, and they've decided they want to take over the Earth. And so the Dai form, and it's unclear whether they're ancestors in all cases, or whether they're just people who have some spiritual connection to the Dai.
I did read a little bit. The only one who is a direct descendant of the Dai tribe is Rin, the girl.
Right, well, she's the only Chinese, too.
Right.
And but that's probably wrong, because Yu's father was one, so I'd call that a pretty direct descendant.
That's true. He was one of the original Die Rangers.
We're getting ahead of ourselves.
Yes, we are. So,
well ahead of ourselves. Easy to do with 50 episodes to play with. These five people are brought together. They have the ability to channel these Kyuruku martial arts energies. that give them the power, and they are trained by Dosukaku, who's a man, that's a man's name, and become the Dire Ranger to fight the Goma using these powers. And they are right up the line, you know, red, blue, green, pink, yellow Rangers, like you think of Power Rangers. It is what it is.
That five-color scheme has been around for quite a long time.
And red is usually the boss because red's the color of Japan. And there's all sorts of things you can derive out of these things. And it's a fight. I mean, that's what it is. It's 50 episodes of fights. It's some wins. It's some losses. It's some and ultimately, after 50 episodes, I think I'm not going to be spoiling it too much for you. The good guys do
pretty much win.
So why does Dire Ranger stand up for you, Ben?
It has a rather epic tone to it, more so than the rest. It draws a lot on, I don't know if it's any kind of established Chinese mythology, but there's a mythology that is presented within this overall series of episodes, and it takes on a very, very, it's like, you could almost call it like Lord of the Rings for kids in Japanese. I'm not saying that it parallels Lord of the Rings, but it has that epic kind of tone to it. And I've always been a fan of those types of stories, and this one really certainly fits. It fits the formula. The other thing that I really like about it is, yes, while watching it, it's very clear. This is a children's show. There's just no question about it. But at the same time, I never got the idea that it was actually talking down to kids. The people who wrote these episodes realized, you know, kids are smart. They're a lot smarter than we give them credit for.
Particularly Japanese kids.
Well, I'd like to think that all kids are, if given the opportunity. And because because your kids really liked this series, didn't they? When you were all watching it.
Oh yeah. Yeah. The only downside to it was that James then was kung fu karate kicking things for, well, he still is. I can see how people make the argument, you know, kids watch this stuff, and then the kids, because he really was.
There is a kid character.
No.
A kid hero, and I kind of wonder if maybe James didn't relate to him.
A little bit. Yeah, I think that, of course, this is a little kid who squeezed women's breasts and looks up their skirts, too. So.
Yeah,
he did. Yeah, see, kids program. Interesting. Yeah, bleep! Like that on her rinse.
Different society.
Different society. Yep, that's definitely different.
Society. I guess they're a little looser.
So you brought up a point that really is probably what to me is why Dire Ranger counts, or why any of the Super Sentai. Although some of them are more silly than others. That's just there's a cyclical nature to them. Yes, it's silly. I mean, I'm still remembering of Jetman, which is probably the second best, in my opinion, a couple years earlier. and in this, we have monsters made out of a cup of ramen noodles. And I mean that absolutely sincerely. Somebody took a styrofoam cup of noodles and applied the monster-making thing to it, and it grew into a man-sized cup of noodles that periodically had to have more hot water poured in it, or it would not have enough energy to fight. But that notwithstanding, they don't. That's funny. I mean, that's kid level funny.
Well, some of the villains are funny, even in Dire Ranger. They are a little. They're comical.
They're comical villains. But nonetheless, they do not treat children like complete idiots, like they did when they converted this to Power Rangers. And some of the things that I'd like to point out is that, for example, our hero's name is Yu.
Or Yo.
Yo. Actually. Well, I'm sorry. It's Yu in Jetman, and it's Yo in Die Ranger, and that is actually just a distinction of the way they pronounce it from Japanese to Chinese, because it means dragon. And because that's a very common name for the number one guy in a Sentai team, because that's the big animal, and his mythical creature is the dragon. Yu Ranger is Dragon Ranger, and he is, he's kind of an orphan, and then he finds his dad, and his dad's Darth Vader.
Literally.
Pretty much, yeah. His dad was one of them, 6,000, 3,000, however many thousand years ago it was, and he is the man who betrayed and wiped them out back then, and Yu finds him and fights him, has to fight him. He has no choice but to fight him, and ultimately, I think his dad pulled a Vader and got in the way of being destroyed by another creature.
The dad was, he was ordered by his superior, who was some kind of a cross between a high priest and a general. And he was ordering the father, you kill him. And when the father wouldn't do it, and started to turn, he then in turn got mortally wounded by his boss. And it played out. In fact, I always remember the very first time I watched this. I was watching it at home by myself, and this was a long, long time ago, and I had it on VHS, and it was no subtitles at all. So. I'm trying to guess what the heck I'm watching here.
It's pretty obvious.
It does get a little – there are episodes that are very easily telegraphed. You can – just by watching them, it's pretty clear what's happening. And I remember I emailed you, and you immediately – it's at the dead of night. It's like 2 in the morning, and you emailed me back. I don't know what the heck you were doing up. And you said, oh, it's Return of the Jedi. It's Darth Vader. And then I watched, and I was just stunned at how blatantly they stole it.
Yes, it
is so obvious. I mean, we're not talking even just a hint. It is almost a pure ripoff.
But isn't this the nature of mythology? Is these are tales that are, I mean, we see this all the time in television programs. They take mythological tales that we know and they snatch them out and they turn them into shows, because these are the themes that come back time and time again. Yes, and Star Wars, Darth Vader, it's been done before, but I mean, that is one. And they took it and they shamelessly reused it.
Well, but it didn't nonetheless, help the score also. Dun, 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 dun,
yeah,
dun,
their score
dun,
is
I mean,
a little...
It's just the Imperial theme. It's
pretty But his dad sad. Dies.
Yes, his dad dies.
Unredeemingly dead in the show.
Well, we think unredeemingly dead.
Well, he never comes back.
No, but he does two things.
Some powers at the end.
What he did is he revealed the big secret, because the five Rangers, they have their individual, what they call Kirin beasts.
Mm-hmm.
Yo has the Yuseo.
Yuseo, which is a dragon. Green Ranger, which is Daigo.
Daigo.
He is the... Shishi Ranger, and that is the Stone Lion. It's a Stone Lion.
That's not Daigo though.
Yes, he's the Stone. Yeah,
you're right. Yeah, he's Shishi Ranger. That's right.
Daigo Ranger. Shoji is the Tenma Ranger. That's the Sky Horse, and that's a Pegasus basically. Kazu is the Yellow Ranger, and he is the Kirin Ranger, which is a Kirin is one that doesn't translate. It's a deer. It's a mythological deer. I don't think we have any equivalent to it. We don't really have an equivalent to the stone lion either.
No.
And then Rin is the Ho-Ho Ranger, which is the phoenix. And those are the... Rin is the girl, the pink.
And the father said that right before he betrayed his fellow rangers, they were working on the final secret. And he reveals that secret, and that basically is they have the means to combine all of these individual robots into a single fighting warrior robot called Direno.
Which is like Toy City for Bandai.
Absolutely.
Which is, and I should point out that even though these programs are blatantly, I mean, in the United States, it is basically illegal to advertise for a show during, for toys for a show during the show. So if you're watching G.I. Joe, you can't see G.I. Joe ads on kids' programs. And if you're watching Thundercats, you can't see Thundercats ads during thing. These Sentai shows are themselves ads.
They are both the TV show and the commercial at the same time.
And if you've ever seen the episodes with commercials, which I have, they are. The commercials,
yes,
follow up immediately. Go watch show. Here's commercial for stuff. Go back and watch the show. And, I mean, it is blatantly designed to sell toys. But it does it within the context of telling a good story. And therein lies the integrity of that. But it is, you know, new robot shows up, first commercial break. Look, you can buy a new robot. It is a little cynical.
But I was also going to finish off by saying that right after Yo's father gives the secret, the spirits of the four companion rangers from thousands of years ago materialize, and they forgive him. Much like we see at the end of Return of the Jedi, when you see Anakin standing next to Kenobi and Yoda in Jedi spirit form, you see Yo's father just kind of disappears and joins his former companions. He is forgiven. He is a Die Ranger once again.
That's true.
So there is something redeeming there.
Yes, I suppose in that respect, the redeem, but it's still a loss for...
It's a loss for Yo, but he really never knew his father.
He is, and this is the difference, is that they do not shy away from these people being emotionally hurt or loss.
Oh, no, they don't.
Not at all.
They may treat it melodramatically, but they don't shy away from it.
Yeah, there's a lot of wailing and gnashing of teeth. There is a lot of yelling, teeth grinding, kind of stuff towards him. And that's what I think. That is one example of, you know, there are thematic elements for each of the characters that go through, and they either form relationships or competitive relationships. It's kind of hard to describe. And one by one, basically, everyone that they befriend is killed in the show.
That's true.
Right down to the end, basically, they are the only ones left standing by the end of the show. It's very dark. It's very...
Yes, it is.
In a way, it reminds...
Pretty grim.
In a way, it reminds me of... it doesn't remind... I did not think of it, but I think of it now in context of it. It reminds me a lot of some of the episodes of Doctor Who where, you know, Horror of Fang Rock, pretty much no one walks away except the Doctor and Leela.
And Leela, right.
And to a lesser or greater extent, many episodes of Doctor Who are like that. There's an awful lot of dead people who die and sacrifice along the way. And that's really what it is. These people, there is a code of conduct and a code of honor and a code of right and wrong that is in all of these Sentai shows. It's not just Die Ranger. It's all of them. And it, without trying to sound stereotypical, it has a very Japanese feel to it. I mean, these are bigger Wagnerian themes, almost, if you will, played out in a toy commercial. which boggles my mind. And, of course, you get big robots. How can you lose with big robots?
There are lots of big robots in this show.
Now, we're not going to really talk about the other Sentai shows, but I am going to talk a little bit about Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, which, as you may have taken, we might hold in a little bit of disdain. Partially because how they used to make those, they don't now, but how they used to make them was that they would take a show, originally it was Chew Ranger, which was the one right before Die Ranger. And, you know, basically our heroes are normal people most of the time, and then they transform into these superheroes and fight, call their robots, fight some more. And so what they did was they just basically took the Japanese footage and they cut everything out except when they were in costume. And then they filmed entirely new shows around stupid high school kids with bullies and pranks and humorous japes and things like
that's,
that.
And that's when they tried to do American moralizing.
Oh, yeah. Oh. And then they would have the terrible, terrible efforts. You know, that's one of the things. In Die Ranger, in Super Sentai, they are moralizing. They are presenting a tale, a morality tale of right and wrong and how you should behave and you know, what is expected of you and a hero or as are many shows, but in this form that's what they do. They do not overtly explain that. The heroes learn it through the course of the episode. Or episodes, it can be over many episodes as their tale unwinds, as opposed to the ridiculously blatant moralizing that's frequently done on American kids shows because kids are too, you know, I mean, did it get to the point, if I'm not mistaken, where at the end of, in the old days, episodes of Thundercats, then Lion-O would come out, "Hey, kids, have you ever, Lion-O here, have you ever been bullied at school? You should always tell an adult. Don't get mad. Remember, bullies are probably just big pussies." Huh, that's funny for me to be saying that. I'm a cat.
Now, I would actually watch that.
But, you know what I mean? It would have, like, the epilogue at the end where...
it would preach.
Wow, really bad. Because obviously the kids couldn't pick it up from the context of the show. That was something that they should have learned anyway. That's me busting on American kids shows, which are, well, have they put together a good one since Johnny Quest? I don't know. So these big thematic drives through this kids program, what are some of the ones that stuck with you or stood out for you?
Well, there were two that really stuck out with me. The first one being this tale, which continued to open up and develop sporadically throughout the entire series, and that was the characterization between Yo and his arch enemy. Would be Jin the Assassin. And Jin is a fascinating character because he's not one of the Goma.
No, he's just a martial arts guy.
He's a very bitter.
Yeah.
Very bitter martial arts
guy.
Want
to say why he's bitter?
Well, he sort of lost his hand.
He was in love.
Compliments. Well, he was in love, but the father of the gal that he was in love with was his sensei. And during they were, I don't want to call them fighting, but that's what they were doing. They were
fighting.
It was practice fighting. And Jin was about to go off a cliff, and the father tries to instill this idea that in order to be the best kind of warrior, you have to basically surrender your heart. And what he does is he pulls out a knife and cuts Jin's hand off.
And Jin falls.
Jin falls into the water and is dead. But no, he comes back.
With a metal hand.
With a metal hand, and he's mastered all forms of, many forms of martial arts, apparently. He's going after every single martial arts
master of each school.
Of each school of martial arts, and he's killing them. And the gimmick is he takes this gold coin, he flicks it in the air, and before it comes down and he catches it, he manages to either punch or grab his victim by the throat, do a twist, blood spurts out, he then catches the coin, victim is dead.
Yes. He runs afoul of Yo, who watches him attempt to do this, and Yo, being a good guy, tries to stop him from doing it, and proves to be not quite a match, but a sufficient that he doesn't get killed right away. This is one where Jin punches him in the face,
and
his blood sprays all over a beautiful field of white flowers. It's very cinematic.
It's so Sam Peckinpah.
That's such a great scene.
It's a terrific scene. But I would dare say that the only reason Jin didn't try to kill him in the beginning is because Yo was not on his list.
Yeah. Not on his list. And Yo goes through intensive, brutal, torturous training to try to
stand his ground. And he does, and
which is like having springs attached to all parts of his body,
and any kind of movement would hurt, and you see bits of blood just oozing out. And,
yeah.
Although when you take a really good look at it, I mean, it's like okay, it's, springs are not really attached, but it's a good illusion. It's you kind of get the sense of where this is going with the story.
Meanwhile, the daughter has found Jin, and she's trying to talk him into coming back to her. You know, because she loves him, and it's all, you know, I love you, and my dad's dead now, so you don't have to worry about it, and, you know, that kind of stuff. And that's running through this kind of theme as well. Yo and Jin finally have a battle where
Yo wins.
Beats the living tar out of him. And of course, he doesn't kill him, and he leaves.
It's not Yo's way.
It's not Yo's way. Yo's the good guy, and that's... But what happens is one of the Goma come to Jin and offers him a
job.
A cursed magical thing. The ability to have these... It's not quite a demonic possession, but it's demonic powers.
It is.
But he has to give up his heart. Basically the same thing that his sensei said to him. And it's been offered to him, and he's sitting there defeated on the beach, bloodied, and the girlfriend runs up to him and, you know, holds him and comforts him, and he punches his fist through her heart.
And kills her.
And kills her dead so that he can take this power.
And he's totally emotionless when he does it, too.
Yes.
There's like not one sense of remorse over killing his ex-girlfriend. It's really pretty tough.
And, of course, it's all so that he can become a match for Yo. He refuses to be a henchman for the Goma once he's got the power.
And there's one other thing. Jin is not only bitter, he's highly ambitious, but the ambition is one thing. He wants to be the single greatest martial arts expert on Earth. He wants to be number one. He doesn't want there to be anybody who could possibly beat him in battle. And the idea that Yo was able to take him out now forever haunts him.
Mm-hmm. And they battle and get hurt, and Yo
over
takes
a number
care
of episodes
of
spread throughout the series.
Yo constantly shows forgiveness. He tries to tend to him. He tries to befriend him. It just, you know, and they too really kind of sort of forge an alliance.
Well, it's really born out of a lot of respect.
Yes, it's born out of respect instead of friendship. And he still, even though he saves Yo's life at one life, it's like, it's because I'm going to kill you.
Right.
And even though Yo's been feeding him in bed and spooning food in his mouth.
But Yo even kind of admits it too, that he thinks that he feels that it is his destiny, unwillingly, that he has to be the one to kill Jin, but Jin has to be at his top form in order to do it, which is why that's part of the reason why I think he's taking care of him.
Yeah, it's weird. And of course, in the end, Yo sees him as a friend. It's a begrudged colleague, something of that nature.
You're right in that they do form an alliance, and it is initially born out of respect. But I think before the end,
Jin's end.
Yeah, before Jin's end, he does the one thing that he tries not to do, and that is he gets a heart.
Mm-hmm.
And you actually see in one scene where he's being Yo's nursing him back to health, and Yo's kind of asleep, and he's talking in his sleep, and Jin just kind of smiles at him. And it's not like you twit, I'm going to get you one day. It was a smile of friendship.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore,
he had to die.
Yeah, so therefore, Jin did have to die.
Because otherwise, Yo wouldn't have had his sacrifice. Not that having his dad killed off at the early part wasn't, but this is actually much more.
And Jin did not die at the hands of Yo either.
No, he meets his demise in another more honorable way, I suppose.
In battle against the Goma.
Although martial arts against machine guns does not work, as we see. All right, so there was another.
There was two, and the other one is really okay. Now as serious as the personality situation and storyline with Yo and Jin were, now we're going to go in the complete opposite direction, and there is Shoshi and the three idiots. The three idiots.
Another adversarial one.
Yeah. Yes. But a lot of the characters are really defined by their relationships, and these were the two that really stuck out for me. I mean, yeah. Okay. So Daigo had a love relationship with some peacock goddess named Kuchiku. Rin briefly had a romance with
the camera.
But it was it the camera?
Yeah, it was the camera monster.
The camera monster, yeah, who initially comes across.
These things roll off the tongue. Yeah, it was with the camera monster, yeah.
Well, actually, funny you should say that, because many times with the subtitles, the way they were being presented in these episodes, every time a character would appear, you would hear their official title, and then there'd be a translation, like equals camera monster. But many of these monsters, they take on some kind of a human form as part of their deception. And this one pretended to be an agent. And he was going to make Rin enormously famous without realizing that he was actually going to use her talent to hypnotize people to do Goma bidding.
Suck the life force out of them, yeah.
Right. So many of these characters, I mean, I can't remember what...
Tazu?
Yeah, what
cause? Kamio.
Oh, that's right, Kamio. Right, Daimugen.
The turtle boy.
I'll let you handle that.
Okay.
So here we have each of our characters are defined by a relationship with somebody. Rin was also sort of defined by a maternal character, but I don't want to go too far into that. But the two that really stuck out were what I thought were the two extremes, the most noble and honorable and serious, and the most ridiculous and comical. Not to mention the fact that I absolutely cannot stand Shoji as a character.
Is it the teeth? It's the teeth, isn't it?
No, he's just this. He's a boxer, and unfortunately he's written sort of as a stereotype because he's not very bright.
He's dumb. He's hot-headed. He's very hot-headed.
So he comes across these three Goma.
The motorcycle, one, the...
Motorcycle, the tombstone, and the telephone.
And the telephone.
And the telephone's a girl, no less.
Of course.
And he's always bumping into them, and there's always these contests that are involved. And they're just... They're ridiculous to no end. But by the time the whole thing is over... Shoji has completely humiliated the three idiots time and time and time
again. And that is actually their name, by the way, the three idiots.
They're called the three idiots.
Yeah.
Because they're viewed as idiots even by the Goma leadership to the point where they're pretty much expelled. So you've got these three monsters that are just relegated to being the Japanese version of Keystone Cops. I mean, they're complete and total boneheads. And in the end, they kind of turn around and they become to Shoji what Jin was to Yo. But it was done in... I mean, you don't want to... I suppose for the sake of a children's show, you didn't want to have something very serious and very dark and very grim with each character. You'd want to change the tone a little bit. And... they saw with Shoji, oh, here's an opportunity to go comical. Just as with Daigo, we had an opportunity to go romantic.
Mm-hmm.
With his love affair with Peacock Lady, Kujaku. So they chose to go in this really ridiculous, comical approach with Shoji. And while I thought it was kind of neat that you had these three Goma creatures that they end up becoming supportive of the Dire Rangers, much the same way Jin did. The execution of it, I thought, was just it was reduced to nothing but pratfalls, you know, almost pie in the face kind of humor. And while I didn't think it actually talked down, it didn't interest me. I thought it was I personally thought it was a little stupid. So. That's why I remember it, because I just thought it was poorly done.
And the idiots are actually killed, but they're such idiots. They're such idiots that they're kicked out of hell.
That's how bad they are. It's like death doesn't even want them.
Yeah, they're things. Well, I'll just take a brief stab at. The other two that I thought, I think the Kazu and Kamiya story is not really worth it. That he really got kind of the short end of the stick in that one, the Yellow Ranger. But the Shishi Ranger, the Green Ranger, Daigo, mates and falls in love with Kujaku, who is a reincarnation, or the next incarnation, let's put it that way, of a Buddhist deity.
She apparently aspires to be that Buddhist deity. It's kind of muddy. And then becomes one.
And then becomes it. Through the whatever process it is that they go through to become those things. And she had been in a Dai as a child. And she aspired to become it so that she could save her friend, Gara, who had saved her life once but had been scarred. And Gara... ultimately went off to join the Goma because she was scarred, and that's the kind of shallow people they are. But Kujaku had actually gone through all this in an effort to try to help her friend, but then they became bitter enemies because that's the way these things go.
Well, it's the shallowness does not only apply to the enemy, because Gara uses Kujaku's vanity to trap her in a mirror prison.
Right, for 6,000 of years. And when she escapes, she vows revenge on Gara.
She's pissed off.
Yeah, she's totally not behaving in a Buddhist deity sort of kind of way as you're supposed to get the whole Om and Zen and stuff. But her Daigo falls madly in love with her, and she is quite pretty.
She is pretty. And she has this outfit that has these steel-like feathers coming out of this, you know, off her skirt and off this headband that she wears. I mean, and she has these two knives that are supposed to look like sort of like peacock feathers.
Yeah, so it's all, you know, what any Green Ranger would fall for. But she is a problem. She's dying because of Earth's polluted atmosphere. A little bit of moralizing.
More moralizing.
That one was a little bit heavy-handed. And as she loses feathers, you know, she's going to die. And she's spending her time trying to find the peacock's tears, which is a legendary thing that the fluid that comes out of it will heal anything. And Daigo, you know, loves her, but she doesn't want to be in love because she's bent on revenge and she needs to get the tears so that she can have her revenge. But Daigo's, throughout the course of the series, Daigo is working on her and she's coming closer and closer and closer to being the hero that she's supposed to be. You know, that has undone the damage of the thousands of years of prison and the hatred, and you know,
she's slowly accepting the mantle of what
she's
a noble
supposed to be. And ultimately in the end she gets the peacock's tears, but she realizes she can't use them because it will destroy mankind.
It's not quite...
Yeah, it was a little unclear. It's one of those Japanese explanations. Yeah, you know, people would have no disease, and then, poof, they'd die. So, you can't have it. But she uses it to cure Gaara's scar and her then-blinded eyes. And she dies. And Daigo is left a wrecked man. And he really looked wrecked at the end of the series, too, 50 years later, when it looked like he was a monk.
Oh, he was the worst.
Yeah.
He was the worst. It was pretty sad, but let's not get too far ahead of ourselves again.
So, I mean, that one really is, again, it's a sad story. I mean, my kids were watching it, and, you know, there's a certain point in Die Ranger towards the end where the people start dropping off. Jin the Assassin, Kujaku, the three idiots, not so much.
Ko's mother, after all that time to find her.
Yeah, Ko is the boy, and he's secretly the sixth ranger.
Which is a formula in many of the Super Sentai series.
Starting
halfway in, you introduce a new ranger.
For more toys.
Yeah.
And he's been trying to find his mom. He's staying with Rin. He gropes her on a regular basis. He's a really obnoxious little kid. And his mother spiritually reveals that if he isn't, something isn't done with him by his 10th birthday, he'll become a Goma.
Because he has Goma blood in him.
He has quote-unquote Goma blood. Well, it turns out he's half Goma. His father is the head Goma guy. And the other villain, which is a boy, which is the head villain's son, is his twin brother. And those two hate each other. They don't know they're brothers. And they're trying to destroy each other. And, of course, he's trying to get to his mom, and the other one's trying to prevent him from getting to his mom, so he'll become a Goma. And they've much fights and tribulations and trials, and then they finally get to the mom, and she's killed, as is his brother. And
but not before the mother does get to perform some ritual which purifies Ko of his Goma blood.
Right. So, I mean, he does come out of it redeemed, but he is... but again, he's not untouched by tragedy, as are they all. So, you just wouldn't see this on a Saturday morning kids show. And of course, they remove all that kind of stuff from the when they do most of these Power Rangers. So yeah, I mean, this is a program that, you know, you'd have to work at to see. And it is 50 half hours
Now, about 20 minutes per episode.
Well, it's a half-hour show minus commercials, so, yeah, they're about 20 per episode, but, you know, it feels like 50 half-hour episodes. But it is, I think, it gives an example of, it gives the prime example of what is the phenomena, which is still going on. I mean, they still make Super Sentai shows. So, you know, you want to take your argument whether it was 1975 or 1979. But we'll call it 1979.
Irrelevant
with the creation of it. And as of 2012, right now, Tokume Sentai Go Busters is airing.
Go Busters?
Go Busters, yes.
That actually doesn't sound very good.
Have you
seen it?
I haven't actually seen any of Go Busters, although I've seen Go Kiger, which is the one before it. And, you know, the problem is, it's CGI. Now that they've got CGI, they can do all sorts of stuff. It just
kind of takes away some of the charm.
You mentioned earlier in the episode that they had jumped the shark. And I can't speak to that entirely, because there's probably more of them now that I haven't seen than the ones that I have in that gap between, say, O-Ranger and Go Busters. And part of that is because what we were just talking about, Power Rangers was big. I mean, big, really big here in the United States. And they had to feed that monster. And you can kind of see it in, because they didn't know what to do with Die Ranger. And so basically they wasted it, I think. Not that it wasn't wasted.
Well, they kind of pigeonholed it into the entire, into the Power Rangers mold, but they didn't, they were trying to, Power Rangers was modeled after Jew Ranger, and then so you're trying to take Die Ranger and fit it into Jew Ranger in the American medium, and it destroyed what little bit of the product there was there. I mean, it forced them to totally alter the entire story, or at least what little bit was left of it.
Part of the thing that made this difficult, it made it difficult for Jew Ranger as well, with all the older Sentai, the heroes frequently fought out of costume.
Yeah.
And, of course, that footage is unusable. In Die Ranger, it's that way. In Cocker Ranger, it's that way. And they used even less of Cocker Ranger as they went through their Power Rangers stuff. And then something I thought rather heinous occurred, and that was with O-Ranger. Basically, and I haven't seen all of O-Ranger. I'm told actually that it got much better as it went on, but I had to give up watching it back when it was airing years ago in the 90s. Because basically the heroes would arrive on the scene and they'd go, okay, transform! And they'd change into the thing and they'd fight the entire time in costume. And it was so obviously designed so that it would be easier to incorporate it with the American footage that it was... It's kind of like Spider-Man movies in reverse. Now, one of my complaints about Spider-Man movies is that every chance they get, Peter Parker's mask comes off in a fight.
Right.
Because, you know, you have the constraints of an actor emoting and, you know, feeling, and the mask is not really very good at that. And so they, you know, show me Tobey Maguire's face, and they rip the mask off. Which is wrong, because that's not how it is with Spider-Man, but that's another story. In the Sentai shows, it is that way. The mask is the battle armor that comes on.
It's not a secret identity kind of thing. They're not exactly hiding who they are.
Right.
I mean, they transform in right there in public. They'll be, as you see in Die Ranger many times, they're running down the street and they
transform. That's
right. They transform right there and then.
But when they need to, and so as they moved into the O-Ranger, they began this kind of uneasy alliance with Saban Entertainment, who made Power Rangers, to adjust it. And now, or as of the last time they were making Power Rangers, they were actually, they would do joint filming in Japan, in New Zealand, so that they would actually be filming the American Power Rangers at the same time they were filming the Japanese programs. And I think they've gotten a little better with regards to not destroying the Japanese product by just not even using the footage. They just do the whole thing over again in American with different stories completely. Anyway, that's our Japanese digression for this week, unless you have anything else to say about
One of the universal story elements that is brought in, especially we get it towards the end. Well, actually, in the last third, they introduce for a brand new toy this robot of gargantuan size named Daishinju. And he's basically this.
I have all of them.
I know. I've seen them. He's essentially this Chinese god who really is just very, very upset at this constant fighting going on between good and evil. And he's there to put a stop to it. And throughout Daishinju's appearances, we are told that the good cannot destroy the bad. It's the good and the bad must always be there. They must always exist. And one of the ways that is demonstrated is Yo's final battle with the head bad guy of the Goma. Yo beats him in his civilian form, shall we say. I mean, he's not using any of his superpowers. I mean, he's using his martial arts to fight him. But he ends up killing him by stabbing him with a knife.
Okay, but he kills him by stabbing him with a knife. It is a knife fight. The bad guy pulls the knife.
Right.
Yeah, okay.
And I mean, Yo's not it's not a cold-blooded murder. Yo defends himself with and ends up turning the knife against his assailant. It's a sort of a rather metaphorical way of not using your power of good to destroy the power of bad. And we had alluded to how Daigo looks in his later years. And what ends up happening is the series ends many years in the future. And all of our heroes are now elderly. In fact, I think I read somewhere that it was 50 years later.
50 years later, yeah.
They're all
dig that computer Rin had.
I didn't, you know, actually, I'll need to rewatch it. I didn't get a good look at it.
Well, it's a 1980s Japanese computer.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, it's funny that everything else, I mean, you know, in society really hadn't changed all that much. And they're having all the Rangers, I guess they've maintained contact with each other, and they're all getting together for a big reunion dinner. And you've got Rin, who looks like an elderly grandmother. You have Shoji, who looks... He sort of reminds me of Burgess Meredith in the Rocky movies.
Now former world champion.
Former world champion who is now so injured that he can barely stand up straight. You have... let me see.
Yo's wearing a top hat.
Yo's wearing a black coat and top hat, and we really don't get any sense of why.
I think it's because he owns his own dumpling shop.
Yeah,
I
think he's. That's what I was guessing, is that maybe he's a proprietor of his own.
And I would say that he looks like the guy from Monopoly.
He does.
Except Doesn't Ko look even more like him?
Yeah, there's a photo of Ko, who it's so pathetic because
they've taken a 10-year-old boy and given him a pipe and a mustache and gray hair.
They gray his hair and put a mustache and beard, and he's holding a pipe, and the pipe is disproportionately large to the hand. I mean, it's just so sad to look at. It's like you couldn't actually cast somebody in the part? No, because how are we to know that's really Ko? But the one that's really pathetic is Daigo.
You know, it's funny. Daigo looks like a monk, sort of.
With this Albert Einstein hair just frizzing out on the sides.
Except that he's bald,
He's bald on the top, but he's got all this hair just sticking out like mad off the sides. And he just stands there shaking like he's got – I mean, I don't want to insult anybody who has – Parkinson's or something, but he's shaking like he does. It's just very, very awkward. But anyway, what ends up happening is, as they're about to have their dinner, Yo comes running and says, "The Goma have returned. They returned. Turn on the television," and they do. And there's a pretzel monster, I think it is, and he's attacking.
I'm not sure what that monster was, but it's a repeat of the first monster that attacked them in the first episode.
And I think it's sort of like a pretzel type monster. I can't remember what they call him really. And then all of a sudden, these five kids, who are played by the same five actors, who are dressed rather
straight out of Back to the Future Part 2.
Yeah, it looks a little edgy. Mm. And it turns out that they are the grandkids of our five original heroes. And they have taken up the mantle. They are the new Dire Rangers now. They have been training in secret, although I'd like to know who was their teacher.
That's forgotten to mention what happened to Dosakaku there.
Yeah, Dosakaku. The mentor, he ends up being killed towards the end of the series because
having been revealed that he was actually a traitor Goma.
He's a traitor Goma because he hated the war. Yeah, so you've got all these turncoat themes that are still going on in the series. So we have
always die from that.
Yeah, it'll always kill you. So we have no idea who really trained them. All we know is that now they're trained and they were able to transform. There's a word for it.
Henshin?
So in
Die Ranger, it's Tenshin.
Tenshin, that's it.
It's typically Henshin in Japanese. So just for the sake of argument out there, Japanese is, of course, its own language, and Chinese is its own language. But Japanese didn't have a written language. And so they took Chinese characters, which is why the base characters in Japanese are the same as the base characters in Chinese. So what they do is they have something called an on and a kun, on and kun pronunciation. And I believe on is the actual Japanese pronunciation. That's where they take the Japanese word and they say, that's this character. But when they combine it with other things to make new words, they use the kun pronunciation, which is based on the Japanese, only it's been sort of all, or it's based on the Chinese, but it's kind of based, so it's been Japanese-ized a little bit. So, for example, if you have a word like in Chinese, dianhua, which is two characters, dian hua, which is electric speak, which is telephone. In Japanese, they combine the same two together and they pronounce it dan hua. Subtle difference, but anyway, so henshin is the word that's used throughout most all the Sentai series. But in Die Ranger, because they're using a Chinese theme, they change it and they use tenshin. Just, there's a little trivia for you.
No trivia there.
So it's a little Chinesey.
Right. So basically, our heroes' grandkids are now the new heroes. They are the new Dire Rangers. And it's at that point that Yo finally understands what it is that he had been told when he was a Dire Ranger by
Dosakaku's spirit.
And that is...
it never ends.
The fight always goes on. It's sort of this, you can't have shadow without light.
Yep.
But at the same time, you can't have a light without it casting a shadow someplace. The two must coexist.
And so the war must always go on.
War always goes on. So there's a sense of futility. Even though our heroes generally win time after time, there's this sense of futility that you're just – I don't know if you're like stalling off the inevitable or what. But it's their way of saying, well, the fight goes on.
Okay. Well, this has been our diversion to Japan. I don't have anything planned for any further Japanese stuff anytime soon, but I wanted to do something a little different, and we had just finished watching through this in glorious English subtitles.
I was mainlining these things every time I got a new set of episodes. I just loaded the right into the iTunes and just one after the other, after the other, after the other. I mean, it was great fun to watch again.
So, next time, I don't know what we're doing. Didn't we already say that? It's Star Lost.
Star Lost.
It's Star Lost. We're back to the Star Lost. All right. Well, I hope you'll join us again next time on Fusion Patrol.
Cheers.
You've been listening to the Fusion Patrol Podcast, a production of Lone Locust Productions. Join us on our new discussion forums at FusionPatrol.com. Find us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter, username Fusion Patrol. You can also send us feedback by email at feedback@FusionPatrol.com. If you'd like to support Fusion Patrol, please leave us a review on iTunes. Fusion Patrol's theme music is Fight the Future by Amberwolf.